Hello and welcome to the Southern Utah Housing Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. And today I'm so excited because I have three very special guests. It's the Porter team. Jonathan Zundell, Dan Porter, and Sierra Storwold is her married name. I was going to say straight, but I know your married name. And so first of all, I just want to start out and have you guys tell me a little bit about yourselves and what it is that you do in real estate and in the housing market. What are your areas of specialty?
Well, we focus a lot on new construction. We've probably been doing new construction for, Dan and I have been in the business for over 20 years and have had a lot of experience in new construction, in developments, not only just selling them, but actually doing it, doing developments, building homes. And so we bring that knowledge to our clients and hope that we can help them be successful through that.
And you, Dan?
Yeah. We're going around the table.
Yes, I want to hear everyone's input.
Yeah. So just piggybacking on what Jonathan had indicated, with our clients, we try to do what a term that we use quite a bit, concept to completion. So we'll take a raw piece of ground, we'll help an investor, developer, take that raw piece of ground, turn it into building lots, and then at that point, turning them into build jobs and then sell. There's projects that we've all been involved in that have really taken up to 5 years to actually see anything come of it. So you better be in it for the long haul.
Awesome. And Sierra, what's your role in the Porter team?
Yeah, so I do have a real estate background. I have my real estate license. But when I moved down here to Southern Utah, found the Porter team, Dan and Jonathan, and they recognize that there's a lot of different sides to their business, right? And they need to focus on the front side of it and not the back end paperwork office, all the little things that pulls it all together. So that's where I come in. That's my role. I try to see the different side of things that they don't always see and want to focus their time on. So that's my role, is to try to hold it all together for them.
And she does a wonderful job. So on our team, we need to mention that we've got as well as Sierra, Renee, and then we have some buyer specialists, Kevin, Mitch, and Joseph.
Okay, so Dan and Jonathan, you focus more on the listing side, like the seller side. And then you have other people on the team who do the buyer side.
That's correct.
Yep.
Right. Great.
Let's not forget Jenny.
Yes.
She's been some part of this.
All versions.
I've done it all. I've done Sierra's job. I've been a buyer agent sometimes. And right now I'm taking a break while I go to school. So thank you.
I think you're taking a break.
I think I'm taking a break, and then I keep being busier than I intend to be.
She keeps on threatening to quit.
Jenny about twice a week.
Yeah, it could
be. Hey,
can
you help me with this? Hey, can you help me with this?
I don't know. I think Sierra is quite highly capable now. I rarely get asked for help anymore. Okay, so one of the main focuses of this podcast, especially this first season that I'm doing, is on affordability of the housing stock in our county. And we were just looking at a market report. Dan, maybe you can tell us a couple of the numbers of the current market report.
Yeah, so I just pulled this up so that we could maybe review it while we're on air. This is only for the Hurricane Valley, so that would include Hurricane, Laverkin, Tokerville,
and up into Apple Valley.
And up into Apple Valley, right. We still have a 24.8 median sales price increase over the last 12 months. So last year at this time, the homes are selling for 24% more than they were last year at the same time, which is pretty phenomenal. There's actually less listings in August of 2022 than there are new listings of August 22 compared to of August 21. So we had 99 last year at this time, and we have 94 this year. So there's a decline of, you know, five listings.
Mm-hmm. So kind of leveling off. And this is showing you kind of our transition in our market right now. We are in a transitionary market, and that's what creates difficulty. Anytime you're transitioning, adjusting is difficult.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what are your thoughts on affordability? It seems like these numbers where it's risen by over 24% this year, has that been pretty consistent over the last couple of years? How has it been? What have you seen in new construction?
Yeah, I was just going to say the last couple of years, it's just been nonstop appreciation. So it's almost a little bit of a relief to have a little bit more breathing room with inflation, interest rates, all those uncertainties, especially with those two issues. We found that a lot of buyers had, mostly in June, had been sitting on their hands, seeing what was going to happen. Last month, we ended up closing 54 sides or sales in the Hurricane Valley. Compared to August of 2021, it was 67. So there's just a slight decline in the amount of closings and pendings. But what you are seeing a lot of is sellers willing to negotiate price. And so there's been, the last few years, we have not had to negotiate at all. If anything, we had buyers fighting for, you know, a house, which still happens, but not at the frequency that it did.
So in combination with COVID and everything that brought, we just, our supply, we have a shortage of housing. On top of that, we have a shortage of laborers. We have a shortage of materials. And so all of that created high demand, and prices started to go through the roof. So coming out of COVID, everything started going up, increasing prices mm-hmm. of everything. And so as a result, that's why we had the increase in interest rates.
A lot of that was based upon labor shortage as well as supply chain issues.
Mm-hmm. So as they raise the interest rates to try to kind of slow that down, that's what we're experiencing right now.
Mm-hmm. So on new construction stuff, has it been, I know that one of the most affordable housings is usually the existing stock from, you know, 5 to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Is new construction still having like high demand, or is it slowing down? Is it slowing down across the board? Is there any difference between new construction and existing housing stock?
New construction still gets a higher price per square foot.
Mm-hmm.
There's still...
Still a shortage.
Still a shortage. There's mm-hmm. still a lot of activity. But what you are seeing is people who are willing to wait for a build to happen. So anywhere between 6 to 9 to 12 months. That's not happening as much anymore. And that's mostly allocated to the fact that interest rates are so unstable. You have no idea what is going to happen. So what we're seeing is, as the homes are about 30 days from being completed, you really see what the finishes are at that point. On top of that, you can lock in a interest rate, and you can be confident that your payment is going to be what it is. Whereas if you're waiting for 9 months on something, you don't have that security.
Whenever there's a shortage, the existing homes sell for really high prices. And
yeah.
So we've got shortages. We still do. There's just mm-hmm. not enough homes to for everybody. And so, yeah, prices are still high. With the increased interest rate, prices have adjusted down. They've softened a little bit, which is okay. It's mm-hmm. just part of the cycle.
So the average is, like, this month it's still 24.8. So do you think that over the next 6 months to 12 months that'll maybe slow down a little bit with prices softening right now?
Yeah, we anticipate it to come down.
Cool. And so what kind of trends have you seen in new construction in the last 6 months? How is the labor because it seems to me like I've heard of so many just shortages, supply chain issues, labor. Is any of that softening right now, or is it still prices still really hard?
Materials seem to continue to go up. Mm-hmm. Not a lot. They're a little bit more stable, but they still continue to go up. And where we used to have prices jumping up all over the place, builders weren't comfortable saying, hey, we will do a pre-sale, because they had no idea what those prices were going to be. Mm-hmm. But with that stabilizing a little bit, builders are more willing to say, hey, let's consider this. With more days on the market, they're wanting to do some pre-sales.
The only material that we're seeing where there's any type of a drop would be the lumber. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have fluctuation on your lumber package, your truss package, but that's really it.
And it's always, historically, very volatile.
It's a volatile market. And have you seen, so do contractors kind of want to wait until after all that is known before they start pricing their inventory?
That has been the
case. Is that something they've had to watch for?
That's been, over the last couple of years, that has been the case.
Okay.
But I think that's stabilized enough that they are willing to start looking at pre-sales again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and do you think if they're looking at pre-sales, is buyer demand there for that, or is it slowing down with some of the older stock being more available and closings going down?
Yeah, the phones definitely ring in regards to having inventory that isn't done, especially new inventory in new areas. We definitely have activity in that, but the builders are changing the way that they're doing things. A lot of the big box builders have slowed down as far as pulling permits. So we have a shortage, and what we're really doing is creating more of a shortage, because, for example, single family permits in August 2021, we had 31 permits. In August 2022, we had 13.
Oh, wow.
So they are kind of, some of the bigger builders nationwide are kind of scaling back, the national builders. And that just creates more of a shortage, like Dan said.
Yeah.
So as we kind of stabilize, we always figure out a way. So the entry-level buyers are still looking. It's difficult because we've increased the interest rates and prices are high, but it will stabilize and they will continue to purchase.
So what... like, if you guys could solve the affordable housing crunch, what do you see as viable options for that? Sierra, we haven't heard from you. What do you think? How can we solve this problem?
I would love to see the builders start building smaller homes. When I came down here a couple of years ago, I feel like we had a lot more smaller homes. In the last couple of years, as prices have increased and how there was such a frenzy for buying homes, and the builders started building larger homes, higher end homes. And so I think right now in Southern Utah, we have a lot of higher end homes and not as much that smaller square footage, that entry level home that we used to see, or that I used to see when I came down here a couple years ago. So that's what I would like to see again, smaller homes and a little bit more base level.
Yeah, I would love to see that too. And I feel like just a few years ago, you run into the problem of they can add that square footage even just to a basic 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom home, and they're going to add the square footage so they can fetch a higher price for a larger home. And so if the incentive's really not there to build small houses. I don't know how we could, I don't know how we could solve that, but I would love to see it, because the demand for it is just unhinged.
It really is a balancing act. I mean, the builder's not going to build smaller homes if he's paying such an exorbitant amount for the land and materials.
Yeah.
He has to find a balance in order to make it worth his while to even do it.
Yeah. You are seeing builders at this point pivoting a little bit and trying to do that, trying to create a product that's affordable so that their product is the one moving.
It's guaranteed to sell. Yeah.
So it's kind of working itself out.
It does,
in my opinion.
You let the market,
let the demand
solve
the problem.
But then you come across the zoning issues. And so then that brings us to city council members and all of that.
Yeah, and I know that Kem C. Gardner report from 2020 said zoning is one of the best ways to solve some of the problems. So we'll talk about that on another episode. Okay, so if you guys could make city policy on that's focused on the housing market and the housing stock, what would you guys focus on?
Such a difficult question because
are you trying to get us killed?
Yes. Here's the problem with the city council is that they've been voted in by a public and they need to look at what try to take care of the people that voted them in, but also look at the bigger picture about how do you maintain, how do you keep a city running, how do you keep things, how do you take care of the entry-level buyers, the retired buyers, how do you take care of everybody? It's a thankless job. They do a great job, but it's difficult. So I would say they need to look out beyond the, it's all a function of time. The best way to describe that is you look at a farmer who wants to farm his land and keep it that way. Well, at the end of his life, when he wants to retire, what is the best thing for him would be to sell it, not to another farmer who's going to pay very little for that, but to sell it to a developer who, at a higher density, who will pay a substantial amount for that so that he can actually retire. Otherwise, he'll never be able to retire. So you look at the full spectrum there. They've got, a city council has to be able to look down the road 50 to 100 years and say, hey, we can't just look at somebody who moved in right now and doesn't want anybody else to move in. We've got to look past that and say, hey, here's what is going to benefit the city as a whole. And I think they have done that. My concern is that they've got zoning, they approved projects that are so far out that they're not helping us with our immediate
needs.
Problem.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really hear what you're saying about the fine line that the city council has to walk. I know particularly in Hurricane, everybody, and I did say that right, Hurricane, for non-Hurricane listeners. We just had peach days. We love our agricultural heritage here. We love that farmland, and we want an orchard next door and somebody to have a big vegetable, you know, patch. So it's really hard for them to do things that are friendly so that our kids will be able to live here and enjoy the wonderful place that we live, but also it's so hard to meet those needs of
housing. Yeah, it's a balancing act. Housing stock is almost impossible to manage. You're either too far right or too far left. There's half the people love you, half the people hate you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that's what makes Hurricane Valley so beneficial, though, for development, is that it is such a huge area of southern Utah. And I'm sure there's more than just the Hurricane Fields where there's agriculture. There's all these rocky hills and desert land that there's room to grow. So.
Yeah, that's true. We do have some room to grow. Do you guys have any other thoughts about affordable housing stories?
You know, I think that the market will dictate. And, you know, we swing from one side to another with the city council. You know, a city that the public wants growth, but they don't want the growth. And so you kind of swing back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I think that we're in a transitionary period where we are concerned that entry-level buyers are not able to afford the homes that are being built. So as we stabilize and as interest rates stabilize and as supply starts to increase, then we'll be able to see that, you know, we'll come up with different programs. The market works itself out. It always has, it always will. And so we just need to kind of be patient and be conscious and aware of the problems and mm-hmm. try to come up with solutions that are looking down the road, not so short-term, you know, mm-hmm. look down the road, say, okay, here's what our current problem is. What's the best solution for moving forward? And I think that we are doing that. I think there's a lot of zoning that has taken place to try to bring a little bit smaller, maybe townhomes in. I think that we've got, you know, we see, it's hard to know everything that the city council is looking at. They know of in the many areas where we've got higher density
mm-hmm.
that I'm not even familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we think that we need to increase the density there, you know, we have somebody on the other side saying, no, we don't. And so we just need to kind of be patient as we move through this period and mm-hmm. it'll work itself out.
And you guys have some twin homes right now, right? Don't you, that you're selling? Are you seeing more like those entry-level buyers buy those, or is it more investors that buy them as rentals? What do you see?
Both. We have two multifamily projects right now. We have Hurricane Village and we have Painted Sands. Some of the contracts that we currently have on Painted Sands are government used loans. So lots of loans that we haven't seen for a couple of years, rural housing, Utah housing, FHA, this particular buyer, VA is another great loan that could be used that way, are over there. But at the same time, we have investors paying, mm-hmm. 1031 money, mm-hmm. to buy other multifamily, use them as rentals.
Okay.
So both to your question.
Thank you. Sierra, were you going to
Just go back to what Jonathan was saying. I had a thought, something the Porter team has done we started it about a year and a half ago. We started adding casitas, and the majority of our floor plans, a lot of them have casitas in them. And so I'm excited to see, we've got a lot of them being built right now, ready to sell. And so I'm excited to see how that goes, looking back to see how the homeowners are utilizing them. Are they using them as long-term rentals? Are they using them for family members? Are they using them as supplemental income for nightly rentals? I'm excited to see that. I think that was a really good thing that we thought of and started, mm-hmm. doing. So I'm excited to see, mm-hmm. how it plays out.
That actually helps as affordable, mm-hmm. living.
It does. It's
where you're using part of your house as income, either monthly, mm-hmm. Resort style, or, to family members.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's, that mixed use is a great way to help. And I think that the Hurricane City has been doing a great job with that.
Yeah, and I've read in some of my research that it's called an accessory dwelling unit when you, yeah. have a little casita. And not only is it a good selling point, but it's also one of the least, it's like the lowest impact as far as like, if you have a small household, like a single individual or just a young couple that doesn't need space for, kids or whatever, they're so nice because as far as like the infrastructure and the impact on the roads and the impact, environmental impact, neighborhood impact, those accessory dwelling units are one of the best practices that's recognized by the research too. So
another cool thing that we probably should mention is just because the country may or may not be experiencing a recession doesn't necessarily mean that real estate is being impacted. And so as we work through this, I think that the demand in real estate is still there and prices will continue to go up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I remember sitting in an economics class with Neil Walter, who's like our economics guru at our brokerage, and he was talking about how through, like, there was the real estate led recession in 2008, but he was saying to all the other agents, now you were in the recession before that, what did housing prices do? Well, they went up 2-5% that year instead of 8-10 or those higher numbers. So I totally think you're right, Jonathan. I think people keep hoping. We all keep crossing our fingers that there's going to be this great correction, and it just might not happen. That's true. The sellers aren't hoping for that, but buyers are wishing, and I don't know that I think that's going to happen.
We look at those numbers at 24% year over year. We don't necessarily want that. We like nice, steady growth.
More sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty unsustainable.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure that buyers are wanting that. I think that they're sitting on their hands seeing if it's going to happen. They don't want to buy at a higher price than what they think they're going to get. I don't think that they're necessarily afraid to move forward knowing that it's going to grow year over year. Mm-hmm. I just think they're afraid that it's going to come down on them.
But on the same side, you have sellers and builders concerned about the same thing. You do not want to buy materials at a higher price and being concerned that potentially the pricing of those materials will come down. I mean, it's just difficult across the board if you have this dramatic drop in pricing for anything, for homes, for materials, any part of it. Nice, steady growth is beneficial to all of us.
Yeah, and I just really feel for builders right now because many of them were burned so bad in that last recession. So they're reluctant, and that reluctance, that persistent reluctance, is part of, over a long period of time, is part of what's creating the problem that we're having right now. And so I hate to see them get reluctant again, because we've already not been meeting demand, and for them to keep not meeting demand, that's a huge issue.
I think that they're being very cautious, and I'm not saying overly cautious, but extremely cautious, where a lot of builders were okay having a lot of inventory happening. That's no longer the case. We're seeing more and more to where, you know, we sell two, we build two. You know, they don't want to overextend themselves and say, how many can you sell?
Mm-hmm. So it does create its own problem as some of these bigger builders start to pull back, because the idea of increasing the interest rate was to slow the inflation down. But if you have such a shortage of homes and a high demand, that's counterproductive in some cases.
Yeah.
When you scale back.
Yeah. I'm just worried about, I love my children so much, but I don't really want to live with them until they're all 45.
So
we just need, want there to be enough housing for them.
We need some housing for them.
Yeah.
And for the couple that's wanting to retire, that doesn't want to have a big home. They want to move into a little smaller home.
Yeah, for sure. There's just a lot. A lot to think about. Well, thank you so much, you guys. I really appreciate you taking time. I know the Porter team is super, super busy, and it's hard to nail them down, but I'm really grateful for all of you coming in today.
Anytime.
Thank
you, Jenny.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.